in the U.S. press, and will be taking a personal look at the implications of the Iran deal for Iranians in the U.S. and Iran. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with local writer Lydia Yuknovich about her new novel, The Small Backs of Children. But coming up next, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, hosting with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Thanks for listening to KBOO Radio, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
In Cascadia. Today is Thursday, July 16th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We've got two terrific guests today. Alma Haas is joining us. You may remember Alma from about 2 weeks ago. She is with Citizens Allied for Integrity and Accountability. This is on a technique used by oil and gas companies. It's called forced pooling. Story comes out of Fruitland, Idaho, but it could come out of pretty much anywhere where the oil corporation, energy industries, sees that there is money under the ground to be extracted. It's a way of forcing. This is an incredible new move that may have been around for a while, but nonetheless is only recently coming to people's attention, especially people who live on top of anything that energy industries are interested in. Some of the issues involve mortgage and insurance jeopardy. There's a whopping big surprise withheld and even denied by gas industry representatives. A property owner's signature on a gas and oil lease leaves that owner open to the mortgage holder calling in your loan, because allowing industrial activity that endangers the environment puts your mortgage in technical default. And yet they're forcing people to do that. They're literally forcing people out of their homes, and it gets worse. But Alma is here today to explain that. Alma Haase, welcome back to KBOO. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you having me back.
Well, you are on the board of Citizens Allied for Integrity and Accountability, working to help homeowners and property owners to fight back. What exactly is forced pooling? How again does it jeopardize one's mortgage and insurance and many other things? I don't know how people could hang on to their insurance policy with this going on under their property.
Well, those are great points, and they're issues that we have been addressing head on here in Idaho. Because I actually have a letter from my own lender, who is PNC Mortgage. They're the 17th largest lender in the country. And in writing, they have said to me, if you sign an oil and gas lease, you are in technical default of your mortgage. And not only can we foreclose on you, we don't have to do it right away. We can foreclose on you at any time. So from where I sit, it's pretty egregious that this, in our case, the state of Idaho, has adopted these rules and statutes that allow an oil and gas company, once they have leased 55% of the mineral rights in any given section, they can then apply to the Idaho Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to force pool or integrate the remaining 45% of the mineral rights owners in those sections, many of whom do not want to sign an oil and gas lease for that exact reason. They have been advised by their lenders that if they sign, they're in technical default and can be foreclosed on. Others have been told by their mortgage companies that if they allow this industrial activity on or near their property, they could lose their insurance and be canceled. So those are real issues that the state of Idaho apparently does not see fit to address.
So why would anybody sign a lease if they're faced with certain loss? I mean, their property values are going to plummet anyway. That's just for starters. Why would anybody sign such a thing?
Well, that's a really good question, Chris. And I think the reason why people are signing out here, at least the ones that I have spoken with, and I've spoken to dozens and dozens, is they have been told by landmen representing the oil and gas companies that signing that lease has absolutely no impact on their mortgage or insurance, which is a blatant lie. But the landmen and the industry in general, as you know, are very predatory. In fact, I would, in my personal opinion, they're the most predatory industry on the face of the planet. So they'll basically tell you anything to get you to sign on the dotted line. And, you know, there are a lot of good people out there that if you tell them something and sit across from their kitchen table over a cup of coffee and look them in the eye and shake their hand, your word is good. Well, that's not how this industry operates, and that's how they have gotten a lot of people to sign oil and gas leases that I am quite certain would never have signed had they have been told the truth.
So the other thing I'm wondering about is the landmen, apparently, I read, go door to door asking people to sign seismic testing permits, which sounds not only innocuous but beneficial. That's a blatant lie, isn't it?
That's absolutely correct. The seismic testing agreements, they tell them, oh, well, we just want to know what's underneath here. And the other thing it does is it gives that particular company a first right of refusal to lease those oil and gas rights at some future point in time. But even more egregious than that, Chris, we've had some reports of people who thought that they had signed seismic leases, and that's the seismic permission for them to seismic test on their property, not oil and gas leases. And lo and behold, when they received the recorded copy of what they thought was a permission to allow seismic testing, it was actually an oil and gas lease.
Unbelievable. Apparently, I understand that some people have been sued because the gas and oil exploration has affected the health in a neighborhood, and people who have suffered the ill effects of this have sued people who have signed the leases because they have huge hospital bills. I find all of this so extraordinary the media coverage has been abysmal, of course, but I've got one final question for you. What defenses do you have in the face of the lies and the pressure and the threats from the landmen working for these energy companies?
Well, I think right now, Chris, I think unfortunately we're not going to get our lawmakers and government to offer us any kind of redress that folks can live with, to be honest with you. I think our only option at this point, and the option that my organization is currently utilizing, is through the legal challenges. We have actually challenged both of these integration applications, the first two that have been filed here in Idaho, and we have every intent to challenge these all the way up to the Supreme Court if necessary, because there, to our knowledge, there has been no such lawsuit in any other part of the country challenging the legality of states being allowed to come in and force people, which then in turn puts them in technical default of their mortgage. So we feel that this is an issue that's going to have to be addressed by the courts, and we are prepared to do so.
Alma, thanks so much. We're completely out of time. And if I can invite you back next week, I would very much like to talk more about this, because really, in a way, our only defense against this sort of exploitation is to get it on the news and get people talking about it, because they can't hide in broad daylight. That's the way things work. But I want to thank you once again. My guest has been Alma Hase. She is with Citizens Allied for Integrity and Accountability out of Fruitland, Idaho. We'll be hearing more from Alma in the future. We go now to Mary Sweeters with Greenpeace, because as you know from yesterday, the Fetica, the icebreaker, is about 380 feet long. A big icebreaker is currently in port at Vigor Industries in Portland, Oregon. That's 555 North Channel Drive, right here. And Google Vigor Industries, you will be just about as stunned as I was. Try calling them and you will be even more stunned. Try calling Royal Dutch Shell and you will find you have wasted hours of your lifetime. Mary, good morning. Welcome to KBOO at Air Cascadia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, well, we talk a lot about laws, and Greenpeace has done a superb job of taking various companies, Shell, of course, preeminently, taking them to court. I'm wondering about maritime laws and maritime courts that should be looking at this. What is it, 39-inch hole in the hull of the Fennec. I did some research into icebreakers, and specifically the hulls of icebreakers. It would take a tremendous impact. This thing only does top speed 9 knots, so 9.5 knots. So how on earth, unless this uncharted shoal was speeding towards the Fennec at a good clip, and the Fennec was speeding towards the shoal, what happened? And why is maritime law not addressing this?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. So you're right. The Fennec, which is one of Shell's two icebreakers, it's currently up in Dutch Harbor in the Aleutian Chain, getting ready to come back to Oregon for repairs.
I misspoke. I want to just let people know it's not there yet. On its way, that's where it's going. Where this thing is going to be. They also believe that they're going to get it down here, fix this huge hole. You can't patch steel. That's the other thing I found. You cannot just put a Band-Aid over a hole that large in that kind of a hull. This is extraordinarily strong steel. It's not like the regular hull on a regular ship. This is a very, very different situation. And as I understand it, patching it is not going to be easy, maybe impossible, and it's almost certainly illegal.
Yeah, well, you know, I think they wanted to make sure to do some patching up in Dutch Harbor before they brought it down to Oregon for a more thorough repair. And I actually don't know the ins and outs in terms of what the structural repair will actually look like and what it involves, but obviously they would want to restore it to its the structural integrity that it needs to do its job. But I think the bigger issue here is that Shell has a track record of cutting corners and of acting recklessly in an area that is so fragile with such extreme weather conditions. And so, you know, this is just one more example of where we're not exactly sure what happened. We do know that they ran over a shallow area that, using, you know, kind of like old charted information. When they could have gone to an area that was much better mapped.
But that's irrelevant. They're supposed to have sonar on board that is constantly monitoring the ocean floor. So charts, by the way, are about to become in the next few years obsolete. The ships aren't going to use charts anymore because they're unreliable. We have much more reliable ways of figuring out where things are under the water. These are depth finders, sonar. There's limitless number of options and equipment that are better suited to this job. No one really, except for, you know, pleasure boats and so forth, people don't use, you're not going to be able to even buy maritime charts in the very near future because they're unreliable. The idea that an icebreaker in treacherous waters would be relying on charts, that makes no sense to me. Can you fill us in on how can that be?
Yeah, you know, I don't know kind of what is the current best practices in terms of use of various technology like sonar on ships like this, but I do know that, you know, there was a known safer, deeper route that was slightly longer that the ship should have taken to avoid this, and they didn't. And so it's just kind of another example of, you know, the company and the folks that it's contracting with cutting corners and not taking safety as seriously as they should.
Thank you so much. Mary, thank you for that. I commend listeners' attention to the Greenpeace website where you can find a lot more about this. Also, take a look at some other, just simply Googling icebreakers. Furthermore, this 39-inch hole is in where? The bow. That's the business end. It's an icebreaker. It doesn't back into the ice. It goes forward with a huge hole that's just been recently patched. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, July 16th, 2015. Ruck Bergeron engineered the show for us. Thanks for that, Ruck. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand.